Today, friends, we are talking about some questions, some big questions like, what is the secret to happiness? How do we change our fortune? And what does it mean to be real? These are massive questions and might kind of seem a little bit random, but I'm looking at these questions because I just finished reading Where the Mountain Meets the Moon. And this book is a children's book, but it tackles these questions in a really beautiful but profound way, beautiful and profound way, which I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about my thoughts on the book and then my thoughts on how the book answers these questions. So, first of all, if you're not familiar with the book Where the Mountain Meets the Moon, it is a children's chapter book, maybe like middle grade. I usually read it with, I often have sixth graders read it, but it was published in 2009 by Grace Lin, and it is a mix, a kind of a new take on Chinese fairy tales that she grew up with. She's Chinese American, and so it's a mix of all of these different Chinese fairy tale elements, but it's woven into a cohesive story, and it's woven into this one sweeping narrative. Actually, technically, it is the first book in a series. There's three books, but it definitely stands alone on its own. And so it's this beautiful cohesive story that's woven from the threads of old fairy tales. And it's beautiful. It is, if you've ever seen Chinese paintings with their really simple strokes, it feels like that. It feels like you're reading a Chinese painting. The prose is very simple. Obviously, it's for children, but just profoundly beautiful as well. And it's a very enjoyable read, I think, at any age. I read it, I've been reading it repeatedly the last couple of years since I've found it, because I feel like it shares some really good insights into the world, into ourselves, that I think are worth visiting and revisiting. So today, I'm sitting down with you guys to chat, to look at three questions that I've highlighted from the book that I think are raised in a really good way and answered also in a really good way. But in case you guys haven't read the story, I'm going to kind of go over the plot. I'm not going to try to give away everything because I hope that our discussion may inspire you to read it if it's something that you seems like an interesting book for you. But even if you don't, I'm going to start with the plot just to kind of hopefully give you as much of the story as you need to really appreciate the themes that we're going to draw from it. So you can walk away with something worthwhile, something hopefully that can change your life for the better, whether you decide to read it or not. Okay, I'm going to open with the first line because I just feel like first lines of books are really special. And yeah, let's start. Far away from here, following the Jade River, there was once a black mountain that cut into the sky like a jagged piece of metal. The villagers called it Fruitless Mountain because nothing grew on it and birds and animals did not rest there. All right, so right off the bat, we have this gorgeous description of this fruitless black mountain that scrapes like jagged metal across the sky. There's this sense of, there's a lack of harmony, a dissonance, if you will, in the nature of this, even in the natural settings of the story. And what we have is this little girl named Minli, and Minli is very different from her surroundings and from all of the other people in the village. She's her eyes sparkle and she's, you know, full of life and adventure. This little girl named Minli lives with her ma and her ba. Ba, her dad, is constantly telling her stories about the man in the moon and other incredible legends. And ma always sighs. She's always mourning or kind of unhappy about their fortune in life. She's unhappy that they're so poor. They eat plain rice every day. They barely have any room for the three of them in their little hut. And life is really hard. And so we have this family who is kind of suffering or struggling with the fortune that they have been given in life. And this finally gets to Minli, this courageous little girl, and she decides that she is going to go and she's going to find the man in the moon from her father's stories, and she's going to ask him how they can change their fortunes, and she runs away. Of course, Ma and Ba are devastated when their only child is missing. Ma feels like Ba's stories are to blame. He's been filling her head with all of these senseless and impossible dreams. And Of course, as the story continues, Ma also has to face that her sighs are also a huge part of why Minlay left. Her sighs and constant pointing out what they don't have made Minlay feel bad about their life fortune and made her, she wants to find a way to change their fortune so that her mother can be happy again as well. And so both of them have to kind of face the fact that their daughter has vanished and she's gone into the wilderness and they don't know. They hope they'll see her again, but it has to take a lot of faith. Meanwhile, Minlay is off on all kinds of adventures. She meets monkeys, which I find terrifying because I'm not a big monkey person. She ends up getting to the city of Bright Moonlight where all kinds of incredible adventures happen. And she runs into a dragon. The dragon has its own interesting backstory because it was created by a master painter who did a really beautiful job painting this massive red dragon that towers, I think they said like towers like a tree, like it's a huge dragon. He painted it, and actually what ended up happening, long story short, is the dragon came to life. But this painted dragon can't fly. And so there's kind of this sorrow here. He doesn't know other dragons and he doesn't really feel like a real dragon, and he wishes he could fly. He wishes he wasn't chained to the ground. He had the ability that dragons are supposed to have to fly. And so he decides to join Minlay, and he's going to ask the old man in the moon, why can't he fly? So he wants to change his fate just like Minlay does. And so this is kind of the first couple chapters of the story. And what we have is we have adventures that befall Minlay. She keeps going. She's trying to figure out how to get to the old man in the moon, how to change her fate, how to make her parents happy, wealthy and happy. And we have this dragon's kind of side of the story where he wants to learn how he can fly. In my opinion, this is Graceland's best work because of the way it takes all of these stories and weaves them together in such a beautiful way. Despite the whole multitude of threads that she has running through the story, it ends up being very cohesive, wrapping together really nicely. And it's just a beautiful experience reading it. So I love the story. That's kind of the plot that I think you need for the to get into the questions. I'm going to start with this question. What does it mean to be real? Like I mentioned, the dragon is really struggling with this idea of he can't fly, so he doesn't feel like a real dragon. I'm going to see if I can pull this part up in the book. So you were born from a painting, Minlay said. That explains why you are so different from dragons my father told me about. Your father knew other dragons? The dragon asked eagerly. I've never seen another dragon. I always thought if I could fly, I would see another like me. Minlay said, I don't think my father knew any dragons. He just told stories about them. Most people think dragons are just in stories. You're the only dragon I've ever met. Oh, the dragon said sadly. And I'm not even a real dragon. So we have this dragon's, the introduction to the dragon's struggle here. And I like this struggle that the dragon has because I think this question of authenticity is much more than just an issue in a fairy tale for a dragon. I think we live in an era of imposter syndrome. I see people talking about this all the time, struggling with what does it mean to be a fake? What does it mean to be a real, whatever it might be we're shooting for? Whether it's, am I a real author? Am I a real personal trainer? Am I a real athlete? Am I a real, whatever the title is that we're after, that we're working for, there is this temptation or this struggle to feel like we're faking it. We're a fake, whatever it is. I feel like I've seen increasing amounts of posts on this where people are struggling with this idea of what does it mean to be a real XYZ. I also wonder if the racial background of Graceland played a role in creating this part of the story. Chinese American, being that kind of person, she talks about in writing this book that she started really loving her Chinese culture, and that's what led her to write it. But when she first read fairy tales, she was kind of trying to reject her Chinese background, her Chinese heritage. She didn't want to be Chinese. She just wanted to be American, fit in like her friends. And so for her, it sounds like she's gone on a quest of trying to figure out where she belongs. What is she, a real American? Is she real Chinese? And I think that this is a quest of that has impacted a lot of multiracial women or women with a very specific ethnic background. And potentially, I think it could impact everyone asking, am I a real, whatever the question might be. So she raises this question really well, I think, of what does it mean to be real then? And I'm going to read Min Lee's answer to this question because I want to unpack it a little bit. So she's there. You're the only dragon I've ever met in real life, she said, and you feel real to me. So I think you're a real dragon, or at least real enough. Anyway, if we're going to Never-Ending Mountain together, let's at least be real friends. All right, there's a lot of things that I really, really like about this statement, about her response here. The first thing is that she does kind of validate, hey, you know, you do feel real to me. All right, and I think she kind of admits that, you know, you're real enough. Maybe you're not as real as you want to be. Maybe you're not fully the dragon that you want to be. But we can be real friends. And so she's pointing to this authenticity that is possible for the dragon. He is a good friend. He can be a real friend for her. And that's something kind of within his control. I like that she doesn't try to fake it. She doesn't try to say, oh, real dragons don't fly, or she doesn't try to downplay the issues that he's facing. I like this because I feel like I've seen this sometimes in social media responses to imposter syndrome. It's kind of fake it till you make it in a certain sense, or, you know, tell yourself affirmations that you are as good as you want to be. I think that works as long as it's also as good as you actually are. I think here what we have is she accepts the beauties and the limitations of the situation. She accepts that, yes, he is a real dragon of sorts, but he might not be the full-fledged real dragon that he wants to be. What's so beautiful about this perspective, bringing this kind of perspective to the situation is, one, you are able to appreciate what you already have, right? The dragon can be authentic right as he is, but also it acknowledges the dream of getting somewhere more. So he still wants to fly. So it's looking at reality and accepting the fullness of it. So accepting the good and the bad. And I think it's a very, very healthy base, both for a friendship and for their adventures. So what does it mean to be real? It means on some level accepting the beauty that makes you who you really are while striving towards who you're meant to become. So it's kind of this dual part, and I think it's really, really good. I think that trying, you know, let's say I'm struggling with imposter syndrome as a writer, and I'm saying, oh, you know, like I don't feel like a real writer. Well, at this point in time, I haven't got anything published yet. I'm not an author in a certain sense, and that's okay to admit that. I think that's really good, actually. And then I can also say, oh, but I have got articles published. I do have full manuscripts in review. And so I have made progress. I might not be a published author yet, but there's something real and authentic about that. And I think it's a much, much better answer than some of the inspirational speakers that I've seen, the major influencers who say, just tell yourself you're better. Tell yourself you're better. And it's kind of, we can't ignore reality. If you are a pro athlete and you try to tell yourself, oh, I'm really bad, then we have a problem. But often what I've seen is when people start actually getting really good, they know they're getting really good and imposter syndrome starts to melt. So I feel like I'm about to go off on a tangent on terrible life advice I've seen in response to people mentioning imposter syndrome. But the point is that to be real, I think it requires two parts, like I've said. Looking at reality and accepting, one, the good, the beautiful things that make you who you are, that are the strengths and strengths that you already have. And two, looking at where you want to grow authentically and accepting that and going after it. So then next we get to the question, how do we change our fortune? Okay, we've accepted reality. And I think that this is a necessary base. You can't change your fortune if you're not looking truly at what your life has brought you so far. One, because you won't know the best way to go forward, and two, you won't even know what you're changing, if you're changing anything, and if it's better for better or worse. So I think this understanding of what it means to be real is kind of necessary. It's a really solid base to moving into how do we change our fortune. And honestly, some of you might not want to change your fortune to some extent. You might not want to change your life circumstances. It might be really good. But I think that this is an often enough asked question by humans in general. How do I change my fate? How do I change my fortune? Maybe you don't feel like your job is as fulfilling as you want it to be. Maybe you don't feel like you're where you thought you should be in this point in your life. Maybe you feel like you wish your relationships were going better. I don't know. But I think that this is a question that's asked often enough to make it really worth looking at. All right, so step one, of course, is look at reality honestly. Look at the good, look at the bad. That's kind of what the book has suggested thus far. But step two, I think, is answered by looking at Min Lee. She hears her boss's stories and she decides to go chase some impossible dreams. People throughout the book, at least from her own village, think she's probably crazy. And at the beginning of the book, we don't really get an answer whether or not the legends are true. When she finds a dragon, we have a really good guess that at least some of the legends have to be true if she's actually running into a dragon, something that came out of a painting. But people say that the old man in the moon is just a story. Can she really meet him? And so she ends up going on all kinds of adventures. She ends up learning an incredible amount as she goes through and chases this impossible dream. And I think that this is what we have to do in order to change our fate, in order to change our fortune. Chase impossible dreams. As you read through the story, Min Lee is she meets a dragon. She becomes really good friends with the dragon. She goes to the City of Bright Moonlight. Runs into these monkeys. She goes on all these different adventures, and it's really beautiful. It's really exciting. And of course, we still want her to get to her destination. We still want her to find the man in the moon, find the old man in the moon. But the journey itself changes her as she goes along. And often, so I guess my point here is that chasing impossible dreams are going to lead you to become, to change your fate in some way, even if they are impossible. Even if they're impossible, the journey of chasing them is going to have incredible results. It's going to be filled with adventure. It's going to be filled with hope, even if it is impossible. But often, they're not impossible at all. They just take a little bit of courage. So I think that's the other step. One, be based in reality. And two, chase those impossible dreams, because so often, they're not truly impossible at all. All right, that brings us to our final question that that I pulled from this book, which is, what is the secret to happiness? All right, so in this book, she hears a story. There's a village that's really happy. Everyone is very peaceful. They all get along. They're prosperous. Everyone's perfectly happy. And there's this evil magistrate who is very jealous of this village and is wondering what their secret is. And he feels like if someone is ultimately purely happy, and then he needs to have that secret. And so he threatens them. He sends them, chest. And he's like, whatever this secret of happiness is, you have to put it inside the wooden chest so that I can have it for myself. Of course, not a great way to going about to get happiness, but he demands their secret. And they're actually really happy to oblige. They're like, oh, if he doesn't know the secret to happiness, we got to help him out. So they write down their secret on a sheet of paper. They fold it up, they stick it in there. But before he can read it, it's actually blown away in the wind. The soldier says he was able to see that it was a single character, or it's a single word. but he wasn't able to read it because the soldier that saw that was not literate. So it was a single word, and that's what we know for the majority of the story. We know that there's a secret to happiness, and it's only one word. So what is it? What's that one word? All right. The secret is, okay, you really should go read the book. Okay, so that's I want us, though, to kind of, I want to talk about the surrounding circumstances because I think that's actually where the secret is. The secret, there is a really good answer to what's the secret of happiness, but I want to kind of look at the surrounding circumstances and see if we can kind of uncover the secret without revealing a major plot point in the book. Throughout the book, what we get is people guess at that one word. What does that one word mean? And if this is extra important for Minlee, of course, who wants her parents to be happy. That's why she's left them. That's why she's risking everything to go after this impossible dream in hopes that her parents might smile again. They might feel like their life is worth something. And of course, it's important for her parents as well because they've lost their only daughter and they feel like they've lost everything that really matters. But the interesting thing is the secret to happiness is only one word. And I think that's the important part in the story. I think the book makes a very strong claim that we overcomplicate the secret to happiness. And throughout the book, different people suggest different things that one word might be. It might be different for different people. Okay, but I think that the important thing is that it's more simple than we might think it is. Happiness doesn't lie in chasing big, impossible titles or huge accomplishments. It doesn't lie in power or fame. We know that if we look historically at any, we can see that. It doesn't lie in gold or riches either. Happiness is much simpler than we like to make it out. Often, once we stop grasping and struggling and accept the beauty in the life that we've been given, once we work with reality, once we slow down and look at what the good we already have, and then work to change our fates and by impossible dreams, but we work happily and accept each adventure that comes with open arms, that's where happiness can often be found. So I love this main point. The secret of happiness is easier to get than we make it out to be. Instead of rushing faster and trying to get more, it's often accepting that the little that we have. And instead of being some complex, elusive state of life, it's actually possible for us to start being truly, deeply, lastingly happy today. Often, instead of getting something, like demanding that things be put into a chest, what ends up happening is it's a matter of letting it be simple, something small, something so little that could be written on a piece of paper and blown away in the wind. And I think that if we all asked what one word would make us happy, it might look different for each of us. Okay, it might look a little different, at least for each of us. But I guess I wanted to challenge you, what one word might someone write down on a piece of paper if you were the one that demanded a secret of happiness? What the secret of happiness was? The truth is, during the story, Minlee seems to figure out the secret. Just she is happier throughout the story, even before she sees the word. And she does end up seeing the word. And I think it's a really good answer. But I think that it's really important that she seems to already figure out the secret before she gets there. And the secret might be actually that, figuring it out experientially, not just having someone else tell you what happiness is, but actually experiencing it for yourself. So I think it might be different for different people, but think, what's one word? And oftentimes, instead of saying, I just need, or anytime the word is, I just need blank to be happy, what we've done is we've told ourselves a lie. Oh, I just need a little bit more money and then I'll be happy. Because then by the time we get the money, we'll just need a little bit more than that. I just need to get this one more degree and I'll be happy. No, because by the time we've done that, then we've already realized, oh, no, actually, what I really need is the next degree or the job or whatever it is that we need after that. Going outward, going forward, going faster, going higher, those are not the secrets to happiness. So we can cross all of those off the list. And often what it is accepting something is Rejoicing in something is slowing down and experiencing something that's real that we already have. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to chase those impossible dreams. It just means that we're going to look at the beauty of reality in a deeper, clearer way. And we're going to uncover our own secret of happiness before we chase those impossible dreams. And it'll make it all that more adventurous. Should I give you the impossible word? Okay, maybe at the end I will, just so that you all have the secret to happiness as well. But first, I think I want to say this book is really an invitation to be more authentic, to chase your impossible dreams, and to cultivate happiness right where you are. What would your one word be? ? Put it in the chat. I'd love to hear what you think. But for now, I will leave you. You can sign off if you do not want to hear this one word. Before you sign off, just please head over and leave a review on Apple Podcasts if that's where you are listening to this. But now, I'm going to tell you the secret to happiness is thankfulness. It's that simple. Being grateful for the things that you have around you can change your perspective, bring happiness. Happiness is never in front of us. Like I said, it's always inside of us. And once we can find that thankfulness inside of our hearts this very day, then we can start being happy as we move forward into those next goals. Okay, happy reading, friends. Definitely check out Where the Mountain Meets the Moon by Grace Lynn if you're interested in reading the stories for yourself. And let's go live a beautiful life.